Good. Welcome aboard, Reverend Pinckney.
Hey, it's my pleasure. How you doing today?
Fine. Brother Edwards here. All right, then. Don, you go ahead and handle it. You've already talked to the good reverend, so
okay.
Get in
okay,
and
we're,
I'll,
we're
I'll
air.
Follow up
we're,
with.
Okay, here we go.
There we go. Ooh, I can't quite hear you. Here, I can't quite hear James Brown, Don.
Yeah, he's playing in the background there.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. See, you haven't got him on this direct line. All right.
Okay. Hello and welcome to tonight's episode, the special edition of Rant and Vent of On Point. I'm Don Allen with my co-host in Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how you doing today?
Real good, Don. Real good.
Okay, we have a lot going on. Today we have from Detroit, from Michigan, or was it Two Harbors? Reverend
Benton Harbor.
Okay, I get it all screwed. I'm sorry. We have Reverend Pinckney on, who's been doing a little protesting here against the NAACP. And I guess, Mr. Edwards, we'd like to start out with him right away and get into the show, because we also have a candidate for Ward 5 City Council, Mr. Blog Yang, on standby. And so let's start out with Reverend Pinckney. Reverend Pinckney, how
are
you,
Reverend
sir?
Reverend Pinckney, welcome. Go ahead, Don.
Hey, I'm great. I'm just happy to be on your show, because I tell you, it's truly, truly a pleasure to be here today.
Thank you, sir. Yes. We appreciate it. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So the last time we had you on, you were planning a protest here with at the NAACP headquarters in Maryland, if I'm not mistaken, and we just like an update of where you're at.
Absolutely. It not only did we protest in Maryland, but we also protest in Washington, D.C., at the I don't know what they call it, the headquarters or whatever it was, but it was downtown Washington, D.C., and we had a tremendous time. I tell you, matter of fact, it was so good that all the news media covered the event. And what we did, they said it was the first time in history anybody have ever protested in the city of Washington, D.C. against the NAACP. And we had just as many white folks as black folks. It was tremendous. I tell you, some of the things that we did was just off the chain, and they was in total shock that it happened. But then, after we left Washington, we went straight to the headquarters in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore, and started picking in the very next day on the 45th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And when we got there, they had the whole place taped off like a crime scene. They wouldn't let the people that worked there inside the building. And then they had the nerve to call the police on us. And the police came out and gave them a tongue lashing and told them that if anybody in the world knows that they have a right to protest, you should know that. And
yeah.
I tell you, in the news media, one of the newscasters said this is one of the most embarrassing moments in the history of the NAACP, calling the police on someone protesting.
And many of you were certainly both either current or former members, card-carrying members of the NAACP, and yet they called the police on their own members. What a
sad
thing.
Absolutely. But we had people come from all over the United States to be there. They came from as far as Utah, Colorado, just to be there for those 2 days.
Wow.
Incredible.
Wow. I noticed there was some restriction as it pertains to the national white media really dealing with it, but clearly you impacted on the local level, both in D.C. and in Baltimore. Have you had any discussions with the national NAACP leadership, Reverend?
Absolutely not, because they literally refused to even talk. One of the reporters caught up with him the very next day and tried to get him to comment on. He ran away. He wanted to give her an interview until she mentioned the protesters, and he ran from her, and she kept following him. And he was so embarrassed that he had to leave Washington and go down to Baltimore, they said. They said, because everywhere he He went.
Wow. Let me do this also, because it's clear that something else in addition needs to happen. Where is the national conference this year? What city and what's the date? Do you know right off hand?
Would you say that again?
Where is the national conference this year, and what is the date, if you know offhand? The
I don't know exactly, but one of the things that I'm doing, they having on April the 28th, they having the Freedom Fund dinner in Detroit. And that's not this Sunday, but next Sunday, but we plan to be there also. and they have the biggest one probably in the whole United States, because General Motors and Ford Motor Company and Blue Cross Blue Shield, they pay for all the tickets, all the food. All you have to do is go out there and give the food away. That's all they do, give the tickets away. And that's how they get to be the biggest of all. So that's where we're going to be April the 28th from 12 noon until about 6, 7 o'clock.
In Detroit, Michigan, where do they have it? That Cobalt Center or
that is
one of the big
exactly
white
correct.
Hotels there or where?
Cobalt Convention Center. That's where they're going to have it.
That's what I thought. Okay. They just want our listening audience to know, 28th of April, the NAACP will have their fundraising dinner. That's really what it is, at Cobalt Hall in downtown Detroit, Michigan. People are welcome.
That's right, and we will be there. With our signs and everything else, and we want to make sure that we're going to send out a press conference to the media. We don't know whether they'll cover it right there, but we will be there anyway.
All right. Now, Reverend, if you could, for our listening audience, and this is our inaugural broadcast here on Friday evening across the country at so-called prime time, could you just give us a little bit of background on what has led to this, and I have to use the word, to this confrontation and expose of the NAACP and its leadership? Could you just walk us back through what happened in Denton Harbor?
Absolutely. It all started with the election of President Obama. And what happened was they decided that they wanted us to campaign for the Democratic Party. And when they made that decision that they wanted us to campaign for the Democratic Party, I informed them that as a 501c3,
correct,
we can't support the Republican Party or the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
I said that if we do, we'll be in total violation.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't like that answer. And we have been giving Whirlpool the flux. We have, matter of fact, every chance we got, we picket Whirlpool. And they went to the national office and told the national office that they wanted to support the NAACP, but they would not support the NAACP under my leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So what that did, that gave them another reason to try to get rid of me. So now, first thing Whirlpool did, they went out and purchased 350 membership cards. Because we had a little bit over, I think we had about 275 members, but we know they don't always show up. But we had about that many, so they wanted to make sure they had enough members to make sure that they win the election.
Uh-huh.
So they went out and purchased. They said the only criteria to become a member of the NAACP, you have to vote against Reverend Pinkney.
All
we
right.
Don't care what you say, as long as you vote against him, you get a free membership.
Wow. And you were able to catch them, and in fact, in our dissertation with you a couple months ago, you actually went into district court there in Michigan, and a state court judge, feeling very reluctant to be engaged in this battle, suggested a form of mediation, which the national, if I remember correctly, declined. But the judge said that an arrangement had to be made with respect to your right to stand as president. What is the current situation with respect to that litigation?
Well, here's what we did. We made sure that when we attempted to meet with Ben Jealous, he was on maternity leave. His wife was having a baby, so they got during that process they went behind my back and had an election, and then they would not let me attend the election, or my people, only the people that was part of Whirlpool program.
Wow.
Because only about 100 people showed up, and they knew that they wouldn't have a chance against me if only 100 would showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So they locked the door and had two armed police officers there, including the chief of police, to keep me from entering the building.
In Benton Harbor, Michigan.
In Benton Harbor,
yes,
Michigan.
Yes, sir. All right, then. Okay.
And so then what we did, we went back to the judge and informed him exactly what happened. He told us to file a lawsuit again. But my attorney was not. He decided, he said, what we should do, we're going to fight them another way. We're going to go straight to Ben Jealous. But I knew that wasn't going to work now. So
right.
I decided that I was going to take up this fight to undress the NAACP all across the country
mm-hmm.
to show, because I figure the only way we're going to beat them is make them do what they're supposed to do. And what we're doing now, we're spanking that butt right now. We're
all right,
putting
man.
Something on them that they never had before. We got 6,645 people to burn the NAACP car. Last week alone, I burned 99 cars in my garage and videotaped it, and so people could see the effect of it. So my goal is to make sure that they understand this. Also, we have a petition just started today. I just put it on the line today, and that we're saying that we want Ben Jealous and the executive board to resign. And we want people to sign the petition. It's designed to neutralize them, even on that level. Keep that wood burning underneath that fire.
Right. All right. Do us a favor, Reverend Pinckney. I want to turn it back to my associate, Mr. Allen. But if you can find the date and the location of the national convention, give us a call back or text it to Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, we need to read that over the air so that our listening audience across the country and internationally can know when the NAACP's national conference is, because there needs to be demonstrations there.
Absolutely. I know it's going to be in Florida. I do know that.
Oh, okay.
I do know it's going to be in Florida. I'm thinking it's going to be in July. That's what I'm thinking. But I want to get you the exact date so we can set up something and maybe even fly down there just so we can protest, because it's more important we let people know and let them understand that the NAACP is out of touch with the black community and they're a bunch of sellouts.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And the best part about it, I have the evidence to support it. See, a lot of times we talk and we don't have the evidence to support what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the evidence to show that whatever you're saying, I have the evidence to prove what I'm saying, that I'm just not talking off the top of my head.
Gotcha, Reverend. Gotcha. Mr. Allen, you got any questions for Reverend King? Because I know we have another caller holding.
Yes, we do. I just like to let people know that to see that NAACP, the demand for the resignation of President Ben Jealous is on change.org. That's change.org, I should say. And you just search NAACP, it will pop right up. And join Reverend Pinckney's email list, and you can be updated.
Absolutely.
On a weekly basis.
Absolutely.
All right.
Please do so.
All right. Reverend Pinckney, we want to thank you again, and we will probably try to get you on after the luncheon in Detroit, Michigan, on the 28th of April, or dinner, to have you give us an update on the Pacific of what happened there. We
Absolutely.
Appreciate you,
my
again,
brother,
and God bless.
Anytime y'all want me on, you call me, you got me.
All right, we'll have Mr. Allen do that. Thank you, and God
all right,
bless
take
you.
Take care
sir.
Now. God
all
bless
right,
you.
All right. Yeah, NAACP demonstrated and picketed against, called police on their own members. What a sad day
yes.
in America. Mr. Allen, why don't
yes.
you get to the, you have a couple people holding. Let's move it along.
Yes, sir, I have a couple people holding. I have Mr. Blog Yang, who's running for 5th Ward City Councilman here in Minneapolis. And we also have a mayor's candidate on the line with us, too, Mr. James Everett. And I'd like to, Mr. Everett, if it's okay with you, I'd like to bring both of them live on air with us right now.
Sure.
Just
sure.
have this conversation. Mr. Yang, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Thank you for
okay.
having me.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Everett, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm ready to let Mr. Yang talk for a minute. What's going on, Blong?
That's what we want to do, James. So let's get Mr. Blong in.
Let's do that. And this is the automatic.
Let's go ahead, Mr. Allen. Just a question.
Okay. Mr. Yang, how you doing? I'm glad that you joined us tonight, but we understand you are running for Ward 5 City Council in Minneapolis. I read a post on your Facebook page that there was some difficulties going on with the DFL at one of the rallies or caucus or whatever they call it these days, and has that been ironed out? If you'd like to discuss a piece of that, plus we'd like to hear a little bit about your platform.
Sure. The caucus just happened on Tuesday, and it was our understanding that people would be allowed to sign up for the pre-convention committees that would get ready for the convention, make the rules, do the arrangements, credentials, and all of that stuff. And when we showed up, there were no sign-up sheets. And later on, we found out that, I guess, apparently the ward chair could pretty much do whatever he pleases with regard to that. So until we pressed, we weren't allowed to serve on any committees. 2 days later, the ward chair sent us an email that said they wanted two representatives from the committees that they would have.
Okay, hold on just a second. Maybe it's just in mine. I'm hearing some real bad interference, Mr. Allen. Maybe we need to clean that up a little bit because this is an important piece. Now, maybe it's just on in my studio.
Okay, this should be a little bit better right now.
Yeah, we need to clean that up. Excuse me. Sorry, Mr. Vine, because it's important that you be clear and be heard clearly.
Sure.
Okay, that's better. I mean, right. Okay, go right ahead, sir. Continue. Let's see if we got it cleaned up.
Okay, so Tuesday was the caucus night for DFLers, and it was held at North High School.
Go ahead.
So we went there, and it was our understanding that we could sign up for pre-convention committees such as the credentials committee, such as the arrangements committee, such as, you know, the nominations committee, among other committees. And, you know, usually the standard practice is that when they convene at a precinct caucus, there's a sign-up sheet, but apparently this year they say that that's not the case. And so for two of the precinct caucuses that we had representatives in, there were no sign-up sheets. There was no mention of that during the precinct caucus. But in one of the precinct caucuses, we noticed that somebody had actually brought that up and asked people if they wanted to sign up. So that was the situation, and the person that asked to be on a pre-convention committee was my wife, and she pressed the issue with the ward chair, and he just basically gave her the runaround. And, you know, so we sent an email out to the DFL chair in Minneapolis, and, you know, magically 2 days later, we were offered two representatives for each of the committees that are available at this point, which are the credentials and the arrangement committee.
Okay, that's great. Things got settled up. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, we've invited Ian Alexander, Kale Severson, Brett Buckner, who I don't expect will show up tonight at all whatsoever, and Ken Foxworthy. And what have you seen them out? Have you seen these gentlemen actually campaigning when you're out at different places, caucuses, during this week?
You know, this week, the four guys showed up at the precinct caucuses. With the exception of Kale Severson, everyone else showed up and gave their, you know, short-lived spiel.
It's
my understanding that Kale is not seeking a DFL endorsement. He might be seeking some other endorsement, but certainly not the DFL endorsement. So he won't be participating in the process.
Okay, that's great. Are you seeking the DFL endorsement?
I am seeking the DFL endorsement.
Okay, if you say you don't get the endorsement, are you going to continue to run?
I am going to continue to run, yes.
Okay, good. I'd like to hear that. Secondly, what I want to ask you, what is your vision for North Minneapolis? And let me explain this because, you know, we've had Don Samuels for quite a long time, and it seems that things have went downhill since, 2006 or even before that. And, you know, there's jobs, there's an education issue, there's an economic opportunity and development issue, there's a cultural development, there's a, you know, political development. And people over North, they, you know, in most cases, they don't take part in the process. I mean, what are your plans to kind of change the infrastructure? You know, you have a group of people running for the mayor, too, for the mayor's race, and, I mean, I don't want to get into that right now. We'll get into that later, but what is your vision for the North Side?
You know, I think it's very simple. I mean, at the simplest level, we just want to make Ward 5 a safe place where people can raise children and where people want to live. And, you know, with regards to Ward 5, I mean, we've lost a lot of population in the past 10 years. And that was tornado, that was the economic conditions here, that was a lot of things. But, you know, if we can make this place safe, I mean, I think we can build the capacity in terms of people moving back in, businesses wanting to locate here, and, you know, things happening that we had not seen in a long time. And so I think that's the most important part, is that if people feel secure living here, everything is going to happen here.
Okay, okay, Vaughn, you're in office. You get elected. You're in office for the first year. All of a sudden, North Minneapolis, surprisingly and shockingly, gets safe. What's next?
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing. One question that's been asked to all these mayoral candidates is, what are you going to do about North Minneapolis? Everyone talks about how North Minneapolis is kind of, you know, the place that needs to, you know, be lifted up for Minneapolis to go anywhere. And I think the person who represents Ward 5 has to make good on all those promises that any of the mayoral candidates are talking about. And whoever gets elected mayor, I mean, they need to step up and provide the work and the effort to lift up North Minneapolis. And so, I mean, I'm going to continue to do that. I mean, I think I'm going to go hard and go to bat for North Minneapolis so that we actually get, you know, all the different things that we need. I mean, the amenities here aren't up to par, obviously. I mean, you know, we have one supermarket here in North Minneapolis for Ward 4 and Ward 5. I mean, that doesn't cut it to me. I mean, there are all these other things that, I mean, you all have seen in North Minneapolis that just are not here. And I think those are the things that we have to slowly work up to. But I think the most important part is we need to do what we can to stimulate small businesses so that they can locate here, so that they stay here, and whatever programs that we can give to North Minneapolis so that we can lift up small businesses, that would be a great thing, because small businesses, as we all know, are the engines in terms of employment. They employ a lot more people than anything else.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, do you have any questions for the candidate?
Yes, I have a couple of specific questions. First of all, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Yang, you are an attorney, is that correct?
Yes, that is.
That's right. And you worked for a short period of time for the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, correct?
A little bit over a year, yes.
That's right. Before representatives of mayoral candidate Don Samuels began to pressure you on your job and ultimately forced you out when you were giving consideration for running for another position. Now, because you were inside of City Hall, let me ask you this question. You were in the investigative division, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Under Kip Brown.
That is correct,
in
yes.
In fact, a man who is a neighbor of current Councilman Don Samuels. In a copyrighted story in an African-American paper, the leading African-American paper in the state, the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, Velma Corvell, who was certainly your previous boss, director of the department, stated that the statistical data on persons of color on city-funded projects is not going to be kept, will not be kept as it pertains to the stadium. And then, just so I'll give you kind of a heads up, my next question will be about the stadium. Were you aware, as an attorney and as a member of the investigative staff, that that was the policy of the department?
No, not at the time that I was there, no.
Okay. Now, let's say you win. You become councilman and on January 1st. Do you technically take office? And one of the first things you'll be faced with is the fact that the city has a $150 million obligation it's a $150 million obligation part of the share in the building of the People's Stadium, in other words, the Viking Stadium. Now, the city at this point does not have the $150 million. What is your position on how that money will be acquired?
You know, I can tell you that the obligation is actually about $350 million. And over the course of 30 years, it's probably going to be closer to about $700 or $800 million. And
that's great. So we're specific.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the specific language of the legislation. It's $150 million.
Okay.
That's the specific language of the legislation. The state's portion is $348 million. The Vikings and the NFL $477 million. City of Minneapolis is obligated under law $150 million to come up with. In fact, they need to come up with $25 million before October as part of their contribution to the construction trust fund. So my question is, you come into office, what will you do to meet that obligation?
Well, Mr. Edwards, I'm going to give you the best answer I can give, and I would say that's a better question to be asked of the 7 council members that voted for it. I would not have voted for that. I think it was a bad deal for us.
But, sir, you, again, I'm giving you the best of all worlds, that you win election.
Sure.
You become the council member from the 5th Ward. My question is, as a part of your first legislative duties and responsibilities, how will you approach that $150 million obligation? Because as an attorney, you know under contract law, you have made a contract. And it's going to be extremely difficult to break that contract and not suffer irreparable damages as it pertains to the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis. And so that is the genesis for my question. How will you approach that $150 million obligation? Or have you given it a lot of thought?
Well, I mean, from what I understand of the structure of Minneapolis's part, I mean, it's going to come through hospitality tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, I mean, that's going to try to cover for all of it. And I guess any shortfall that might be there, I mean, you know, I imagine it comes through some sort of property tax. But, you know, my best guess is that it's the hospitality tax that's going to cover it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. By the way, the hospitality tax and the $150 million is also tied into additional improvements for the convention center and Target Center. So you'll have a real chore on your hands. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr.
Thank
Allen.
You
want to wrap it up?
Yeah, well, real quick here, Mr. Yang, I have a young lady on the phone that would like to ask you a couple questions. There's a caller that called in. Ma'am, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you have an opportunity to ask. Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to ask the gentleman because he seems to, a lot of politicians like to say they want to create jobs. I want to know basically, you know, broken down, how does he intend to do this? You know, the North Side has been suffering for so long. There's so many issues going on, and a lot of people just want to come in and throw blanket, you know, solutions which they don't dig into that really never gets to, you know, getting the problem solved. And I just want to know what he means by creating businesses, because a lot of us around here need jobs, we want jobs, we're working now, and we're not making anything. What does he mean by creating jobs?
Okay, Mr. Yang, please answer. And
sure.
You'll answer. Go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, I'll start with the fact that I don't have all the answers for anything. But, you know, with regard to jobs, I mean, on the one hand, with regards to the city and its contracts that go out to vendors, I think that we need to do our best to require that those vendors hire people from Minneapolis, specifically Ward 5. That's one. You know, two is that, you know, if we can spend about $600 to $800 million on the Viking Stadium, if we spent that amount of money on stimulating small businesses to locate here in North Minneapolis, those small businesses can and probably will hire people from the local area. And those are two ways, very generally, that we can try to do what we can to get people jobs and get people living wages.
Okay, and last question. What do we do about the 200-plus nonprofits in North Minneapolis? I mean, how do we address that?
You know, I think from my angle, when I sit down as the city council member, I will look at what the city gives out to these nonprofits. And I think, I mean, the idea of duplication, the idea of just these nonprofits is continuing to exist without really doing their part to solve the problems. I mean, I think we really need to address that by not giving money to the people who just are there and putting the numbers in place but don't really do anything. And I think those measures are done with evaluation. They're done with just trying to understand why they exist in the first place. Because, you know, I read your piece, Mr. Allen, on designer poverty, and I really do think that, you know, the goal of any good nonprofit is to eliminate itself. And so I think that's the part that really needs looking into from the city council perspective. Any grants that are given out to folks, I mean, I think we really need to look at whether they're meeting their benchmarks and they're actually not just writing evaluations that sound good, but I can see them really good stuff with this part of the world.
Okay. Sounds great. Well, Mr. Yang, Bob Yang, running for Minneapolis City Council, Ward 5, we'd like to thank you for calling in and spending a little time with us tonight, and appreciate you and your family giving you the time off there, too. We wish you well, and we look forward to see here what happens in November. Thank you, sir.
Thank you
for having me. That's what.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Edwards.
I thought that the young lady that called in, I think she said initially she had two questions. She only got a chance to answer to ask one, technically.
Yes.
We just want to let her know that if she has a second question, maybe she can ask that question of mayoral candidate James Everett, who should be next up, correct?
Yes, he's right here live on the air with us
right now,
Mr. Everett.
Let's get Mr. Everett involved here. Mr. Everett is a candidate for mayor, as I understand it. Who either has filed or will be filing to run in the race to become the next mayor of the city of Minneapolis. Welcome, Mr. Everett.
How you doing, gentlemen?
All right.
Doing great.
Mr. Allen, go right ahead. Ask me a question.
Well, Mr. Edwards, I just want to tell you what our call number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, our chat rooms and switchboards are lit up, so if I seem a little bit distracted, I'm going back and forth a little bit, so I just want to be clear and let you know I'm over here in Studio B. But Mr. Edwards, welcome, and I know we have a lot of good conversations on Facebook about different things that are going on, and I would like to ask you, I mean, what is the state of the African-American in Minneapolis? What do we have to look for? Have we shaken off the slave dust yet, or are we still trapped in the Middle Passage? Go ahead, take it.
Good question. Excellent question. what I'll say is I think my opinion of what the state of Minneapolis has changed over time. I feel like I stayed pretty much the same individual, but my classifications of how people have viewed me have changed based on what things I would go for and which things I wouldn't go for, which things I would buy into and which things I wouldn't. And so what the issue is that the perception of the African-American community is not controlled by the African-American community. That's the biggest issue. Some things that are okay, we don't have a standard. There's no standard in Minnesota for what is okay and what's not. For instance, I expressed on one of the posts that, you know, a pedophile can work at the Urban League, but a guy with a drug felony can't get a job. You know what I'm saying? It's a matter of fact, a pedophile can leave Family Day. You know what I'm saying? So the standard is all based on who you know. And so there's no rhyme or reason. Some people think that, you know, that we're better off with the talking head as folks or the fist pounders, and as if there's people that pound their fists but are complacent. They talk loud, but they find a way to assimilate. And so I guess at this particular time, we have not shaken the slave dust off. I would like to go with post-traumatic slave disorder. I'd like to claim that as an actual position. And that kind of chaos that with our horns locked in the cities is allows other people to take control of our community and manipulate individuals. So that's been my experience.
Okay. Now tell me about the mayor's race. I mean, what do you see out there between let's just be specific here. I'm having huge problems personally with the Jackie Terry Owens, Bessie Hodges thing. What's going on there? I know that you had some maybe little comments on that or a little knowledge behind that. Why was the DFL African American? Go ahead.
I go way back with Jackie. I was a part of Nellie Johnson Lee's first campaign to unseat Ms. Cherry Holmes. I actually addressed her at the Insight Forum and told her I appreciated her ability to bring the House Negroes out to support her. The actual broadcast actually went off the air at that time. They pulled the plug on it. It was an interesting sight. I mean, let's understand that Miss Cherry Holmes is a very powerful woman. She's a brilliant woman for her ability to move around. She's a brilliant politician. She might not be a good pastor, but she's a good politician. I think that her ability to look out for her friends and look out for the people that she is rolling with is timeless. And at the time that we had to, you know, come after Miss Cherry Holmes, it was only because there was an elite group of folks. There was an elite group of folks that actually that she had surrounded herself with, and it almost felt insulated enough that she didn't have to hear the voices of everyone else. So Jackie Cherry Holmes is back. I think West Broadway Business Association is an example of how much, you know, how much representation of our community is there. Every other cultural makeup of the city has its own corridor. The Latino community, the Asian community, you know, the Muslim community. It's only natural that Broadway be an African American corridor. And there, at this point in time, is there like two African Americans on the West Broadway Business Association under Jackie Cherry Holmes. And so I think that I'm getting some feedback right now.
Hello.
Hello?
Go ahead, please. Go ahead. You're still on the air.
Okay. So, Ms. Cherry Holmes, I respect her as a politician, but there was a lot of spiteful things that went down before her shredding of the files. She pretty much was the queen at that point in time. As people don't know, it's a strong city council, weak mayor system, or at least it was before RT. And so she pretty much had her own dates at the Target Center. She had favors in every pocket, and she shredded the files of all the stuff that she had going on before. But there's a lot of people that still owe Ms. Cherry Holmes pretty much their whole career. And so I'm glad to see that she pulled herself back in. Again, this is a, you know what I'm saying, it was a battle. So she's back for, you know, trying to move up the ladder and do something different. But I think that, I respect her as a politician, but I think she needs to come clean on what actually happened over time and kind of what, you know, what the history was. Somebody spoke to her the other day, and I'm hearing that she's ready to actually talk about it. One thing she did right before she left office is she knocked down the mural on Olson Highway that was right there, that was the Heritage mural. The last day she was in office, she made sure that a crane came and knocked down that mural. And that's what I'm talking about, is how people love us as long as we're complacent and as long as we're compliant. Everybody loves black folk. But
James, one thing I'm going to ask you a couple questions, though.
Yes, sir.
Block E, which was a part of the fantasy of bringing gambling directly into the city of Minneapolis. If you become mayor, what would be your strategy to revitalize Block E?
Well, first off, we're not putting a casino there. I've actually, as a mayoral candidate, 5 months ago, I started touring the country and checking out the things that I needed to know to be able to be a good candidate. I went and looked at getting the city of Minneapolis off the grid as far as getting everybody energy independence. I went and looked at wind farms. I went and looked at solar farms. I went and looked at hydro energy and different things going on. I also took a tour in Louisiana and a few other places of the actual casinos. And what I can tell you is that by no means would I ever support a casino coming to North Minneapolis, which First Avenue is North Minneapolis. That it was a historic failure. I think we pardoned them for 15 years from paying taxes under Jackie and Sharon. For that building, we actually moved the Schubert Theater to make space for this Block E, which was expensive. It made the Guinness Book of World Records, but it was expensive. So one thing, I would never support a casino. Remember, people, anytime your politicians turn to drugs, sex, or gambling, they've admitted their failure.
Okay.
They could have let all the criminals out to do that.
But I understand. Let me ask the question. In the absence of those things, what is it that you would talk in terms of doing with Block E?
Well, I actually went to Elatus with a proposal for Minneapolis Tribune Square, actually turning the space, turning Block E into a place that vendors all of Minnesota products, from gold flour to, I mean, and doing cross-branding between Golden Plum Chicken, Gold Medal Flour, you know, and different things like that. I would turn it into a place that would, be a place where all the products of Minnesota, In other words, what the Mall of America is to the rest of America, actually paying some respect to the corporations that choose this as their corporate headquarters and actually make that space a place where those products, solely Minnesota products, can be found. I actually gave them a proposal for major Magic Johnson Theaters on the top of it and actually opening a private club called Luxury Tax that was a private club where people would have their own private liquor cabinets and everything. Me and Sam Grabarski from the Downtown Council were actually working on that before he left. And then making a space between Block E, the Tiger Center, the Irish Pub, and First Avenue, Minneapolis Tribune Square, and actually making that space like a Times Square model right there in the middle as a respect to the, one, the Dayton family's history with Target, two, the Irish Pub across the street with its Irish architecture and things that are new to the, and then also First Ave's history, and then the historic Schubert Theater being right there. So I gave a proposal to a latest. They actually offered, they said they would sit on the building and actually turn it into warehouse space or turn it into office space before they did anything with it, and that they were pretty much going to extort the city until they let them open a casino. So my thing is, I mean, that would be my plan for it. Also renewable products. I'd bring all things renewable into the building. That's a business that actually does renewable small wind turbines and stuff, and some energy efficient dishwashers and stuff for the people that live downtown. So I did present a proposal to them, but they said
talk to us a little bit, James, about your expectation, because basically all the candidates are staying away from it because of the new chief. What would be your expectations for the Minneapolis Police Department and its relationship with communities of color?
I got one name. I got Q the Blacksmith. And in using the name Q the Blacksmith, what I've come up with the term was, if they wouldn't ride for Q, they wouldn't ride for you. And I remember when Q the Blacksmith was tased to death by the Minneapolis Police Department and the same officers that he actually had a lawsuit against. I watched everyone, for those who don't know who Q the Blacksmith was, Quincy Smith was actually, first and foremost, a Sub-Zero member. With Sub-Zero Collective, my organization. And secondly, he was a radio host. Third, he was a youth worker, DJ, and numerous other things. He actually worked the switchboard, actually worked the board for the Insight Forums. And what I saw was that the reason why the police department cannot be held accountable is because our elected officials won't even speak to the issues of the police department. So my thing is, first of all, I believe that we need a subpoena power for the Civilian Review Board, but now that has been dismantled. My expectations would be that the police department, actually officers live in the city, or that we would pay officers more that lived in the city. It's hard to build a community with people that think they're coming into a jungle to police folks. I believe that Chief McManus shouldn't have had to leave. I believe that was very political at the point in time that he was there. There were some changes happening to the police department. And pretty much the last Chief Dolan was actually given a ticket to do whatever he wanted to do. So, I mean, I would bring down – I actually offered to R.T. Ryback at one point that we've actually put it under the Community Relations Service, which would be under the Department of Justice. And when he said that the CRA was going to be dismantled, I said, well, why don't we put it under the Community Relations Service? If we put it under the Community Relations Service, which is under the Civil Rights Act of 1960, everything, all cases would be federal. And the Community Relations Service doesn't have a lot of teeth as far as the Department of Justice goes, but all complaints would be moved to a federal level. And as the only time that we've ever gotten any justice in the city is when the feds actually came in any capacity. So my commitment would be to actually have actual officers live in the city. And I mean, and that would be, and also to promote officers from within the city.
And do you think that first of all, that implies a residential rule. Do you think that would be ruled as constitutional? Is there any precedent for that in the state of Minnesota, to your knowledge?
Put it this way. It's been suggested before, not to my knowledge that is. And what
is there
I'm willing
any precedent,
to do, I guess,
the question is there any precedent? Is there any legal precedent for that?
I'm not sure at this time.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure of that. Okay. But what I will say is that the issue is that even if it comes down to actually paying more for officers to actually live in the city, to be a community officer, I mean, there's ways around the whole situation, and there's actually incentives you can give that you can build into the actual contracts. So we can do other things, even if it's not, I mean, because I've heard people say, well, that's not legal, you can't make people live in the city. But we had the highest police brutality cases in the nation for the last 2 years. and it's coming, and there's, it's coming straight out of the city's budget, and it's active, and we're wondering where the money's disappearing to, but there's no accountability at this point in time for, there's no insurance set up, there's no setup to actually hold people accountable. So that when the police want to all pull, now we have a whole bunch of officers that are pretty much Denzels from Training Day, running around actually working informants and actually letting officers out of, letting people out of jail to actually kill other, I mean, other gang members and all that. We really have a, it's a sad state of affairs of how renegade the police department has gotten, especially with the demotion of all the black officers that Chief McManus had promoted.
Well, no one's really stood up for the black officers, but that's another subject for another day. Mr. Allen, go ahead. Well, let's if you want to wrap it up. Thank you, James. You there, Mr. Allen?
We have Mr. James Everett. James Everett on the air. Thank you for calling, Mr. Everett. The Boswell, when are you going to file, sir?
I will be filing shortly. I took a tour. I'm coming back from Shreveport, Louisiana. I was looking at the casinos here before I made a decision to stand against them. And the reason why I'm against the casinos is because it definitely, one thing casinos do is they do encourage a heavy level of prostitution. And with our current economic status and our, a lot of our youth being morally bankrupt in a lot of ways, are the things that have been pushed upon them, I believe it will turn, I believe that a casino on First Avenue will turn North Minneapolis into a brothel.
Thanks for calling, sir.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. What do we have, Don? We have anybody else online and any other calls coming in?
We're good.
Give that phone number again.
Our phone number is 347-246-3904. You can call us. The phone lines are open. That number again is 347-426-3904. You're listening to On Point, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios in downtown Minneapolis.
By the way, just a quick update for those that maybe missed it, though I've every major station, et cetera. The final suspect, the living suspect, has been apprehended about an hour ago in Watertown, Massachusetts. And so a lot of special reports and things going on. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, made an interesting request or recommendation to the Obama administration, saying that the current suspect should be declared and certified as an enemy combatant, which means he would be tried, he'd be tried before a secret court. You'd really never find out what's really behind this.
No, not at all. And let's just like to mention something real quick, you know, about what, a month, 2 months ago, I written a story about gun control or the mental illness of this, and pretty shocking to see that prediction just come to fruition that the House and the Senate, I guess, both got scared, and that bill did not fly anywhere at this point.
No,
so,
quite a setback for President Obama, and even with relatives of deceased children sitting in the galleries there in the Senate, many senators, 45 of them, turned their back on the legislation, and that legislation basically was dead on arrival. It's going to be really tough. Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat, Nevada, has indicated that the bill is withdrawn, which means takes it back to square A. You know, you have to talk in terms of redrafting, submitting, heading it into the numerous committees, and et cetera. So this bill will not be seen again probably until, 2016 or something like that. I'm not sure. Yeah. Sad commentary, sad day in America.
Okay, and I also want to mention that tonight I was watching Almanac on Channel 2, KTCA, if I'm not mistaken, the public access, the public television station here. And they had the leaders of the Minneapolis Foundation, the McKnight Foundation, the St. Paul Foundation, and the Minneapolis Foundation. Also, Sandra Vargas was on. And if you look at these four old white women, as I'll put it, that would be society acceptable at this point. You can kind of understand, Mr. Edwards, why none of these problems are getting solved in the Twin Cities. Because they talked about energy. One is focusing on energy. The other one focusing on people in rural areas, but no one mentioned anything about the city, about even the north or south side, heavy populated areas with people of color and poor white people. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very interesting to hear this rhetoric that they were spewing about, you know, all the things. We're all partners. We all, you know, and they really control a lot of money, these four ladies. And Kathy Werzer was interviewing them, but I've never seen anything on Almanac that's been specific to the African-American community, or even that go a step further, the Native American community here in the Twin Cities. And it's a little bit troubling for me, especially when you hear these big radio and television stations talking about, you know, don't listen to people using Twitter or using their Facebook, even in regards to this Boston incident, where more information was supplied through social media than it was through the mainstream media. And so, I mean, with that said, you know, I have big problems with Channel 2, but I'll just keep it at there for right now. So is there another update at all?
You're talking about out of Boston, Massachusetts?
Boston, yes.
No, not really. Of course, the suspect was wounded, has been hospitalized, taken to an undisclosed hospital location, obviously. But now that we can turn our attention to the ricin poisoning there and Billy Bob there in Mississippi. But probably more important, it'll be interesting to see, because they've really been given a pass down there in Texas, the destruction and the deaths and mayhem there in West Texas, if you will. Not Western Texas, but the town of West Texas, right there around Waco. On the anniversary of the killing and murder of Branch Davidians and David Koresh 20 years ago to the date, if you will, per se. But anyways, that situation in Texas, rather interesting. One, I'd probably stay away from the possibility of any kind of terrorist act or sabotage there. America's real fragile right now, real fragile.
Yes.
You have three human beings just north of West Texas in Kaufman County. The DA, his assistant, and the DA's wife murdered by Justice of the Peace, former Justice of the Peace, and his wife, if you will, the Williamses, Eric Williams and his wife. These are unstable times for America right now. We're kind of fragile, kind of need to try to get, you know, the lid back on the thing. And then, of course, with the Congress refusing to do anything on gun safety / gun control / whatever else, Americans are feeling kind of imposed on, particularly in light of the fact that all the polls showed that 90% of Americans were at least in favor of background checks and et cetera. The NRA said, no, that ain't going to happen either. So these are not very comfortable times here in the United States. But anyways, on any update from Boston, Massachusetts, and from the suburb of Watertown, the authorities pat themselves on the back. The only problem is now we got a powerful international conspiracy, but the problem is Chechnya is under the control of the Soviet Union. I don't think there'll be no retaliation inside of Russia. So, yeah, I don't think nobody, you know. What people need to understand, though, about this Chechen situation, and if there is an international link, is that the man who leads Russia, and has really for the last decade, that Mr. Putin is a master spy. That was his role in the feared KGB. He is a master strategist, if you will. So it's going to be interesting to see how the media, Western media, plays this over the coming weeks. And it'll be interesting to see if the Obama administration holds the line, unless the suspect commits suicide while in jail, how they will allow, if they will go ahead with a public trial. It'll be interesting to see what kind of testimony will be allowed or what will happen. So I'm always reminded of Timothy McVeigh and what happened in Oklahoma City and the basic position of the government, that he was basically a lone wolf, even though the Nichols brothers, a couple white boys out of northern Michigan, aided and abetted. But they didn't get the death penalty, but Timothy McVeigh did. And Timothy McVeigh got the death penalty pretty quick, and I maintain that our Chechen national will get the death penalty pretty quick also. But anyways, that's the latest update from out of Boston, Massachusetts. You still there?
Yes, we've talked about this in production meetings, but I have a question to ask you. Some of the original or early media, mainstream media reports that they were looking for some dark-skinned men. And
the broadcast description came over CNN from Wolf Blitzer, John King, and they said they were looking for a dark-skinned or black male. That was going to be the race angle. It unfortunately fell apart, particularly when a more thorough examination of the videos, particularly the ones that ultimately called attention to the two Caucasians, if you will, were finally revealed. But yes, the original announcement was on CNN, actually, and Fox Network,
yes,
was that they were dark-skinned or black, you know, so... a lot of blacks were getting rousted in Boston last Tuesday, whatever, Monday and Tuesday. Yeah. So that did happen. Any calls?
Okay.
Anything? Any questions?
No, we have no calls. Yeah, let me just give you the number again. It's 347-426-3904. You can call in. Lines are wide open. And, you know, on April 14th, Mr. Edwards, they had the the Music Awards, the MTV Movie Awards on Sunday night, on April 14th. And I don't know if you heard about this, but it just came across the wire, and I just want to – I posted actually yesterday, and it came across the wire again because this is getting a lot of play. Jamie Foxx wore a shirt with a picture of Trayvon Martin and other young people of color that have been killed through violence and racism.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Twitter feed that went up. That say Jamie Foxx shirt can go F itself, F that nigger with the Trayvon Martin shirt on, and it just went into this racial rant against black people.
Yeah,
just it was crazy, and we have that going on. But you know, speaking of craziness, a 22-year-old Morgan State University student named Alan Kenya told authorities that he ate the heart and the brain of a Guyanese man he was charged with killing in 2012. The state attorney said Wednesday that he's expected to enter the plea not guilty for first-degree murder. So that's happening in Maryland as we speak. So he got real hungry.
Cannibalism,
yes, exactly.
Not unusual and not unknown in America and other places in the so-called civilized world, as I guess we are told about it. Say a couple things back to the local scene for the audience. Understand that there looks like there's a intensified investigation of the handling of a $600,000 loan from Franklin National Bank to the former City Inc., now defunct, North Minneapolis. Is that correct? Am I correct in hearing that?
Well, Mr. Edwards,
coming out of federal.
Yes. Since we're live on the air, you asked that question. I just have to fill you in on my sources today and sources to this show also that have alerted us that there is a ongoing federal investigation into the City Inc. and its headmaster and management there regarding a loan, like you just said, from Franklin Bank. And early estimates is that it was around $600,000. But there's a part two to this. The Minneapolis Public Schools for the 2010-2011 school season granted or funded this same institution. It looks like a total, I'm looking at the paperwork here, like about $900,000. And that is an estimate also. I'm not giving exact just yet because I do have a data request, privacy request in. And there has been no tracking, as far as we know, of the money. And I've contacted Stan Allen at the Minneapolis Public School District to ask him, well, if a school closes in January and doesn't make it to the end of the year and the Minneapolis Public School funds them, what happens to the balance of the money? And he has chosen not to get back with me as yet. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards. There are some interesting things happening and developing.
So we're talking about $1.5 million that is now under some kind of investigation by federal enforcement agency. Wow, that's interesting. That comes on the heels of what appears to be the collapse of a little convenience store in North Minneapolis there on Glenwood, right?
Yes, sir. First black-owned, black-operated open grocery store to open in 25 years over in North Minneapolis. The doors are shut. It's a terrible thing. I understand from early reports that they are trying to get it back open, and there are some people involved there that I think we just need to watch closely and see what happens. And there are some good people surrounding that issue, and there are some well, you have your bad apples in every bunch, Mr. Edwards.
Well, by the way, just update ABC and others reporting. Of course, we're awaiting President Barack Obama's remarks on capture of Boston bombing suspects. So that will be rather interesting. President will, of course, praise law enforcement, technology, citizen participation, and et cetera. But again, like I'm saying, particularly for our international audience, I'm really waiting to see how they're going to deal with the Chechnyan chief and the fact that the brother, the older brother, 26-year-old, who was killed last night in what is obviously a massive gun battle, went to Russia and spent 6 months there in 2012, and now they're trying to do a cover story that says in 2011 the Soviet secret police, that's what I call them, made a request that this individual be interviewed, but then a year later he leaves and goes to the Soviet Union for over 6 months. Now they're trying to talk in terms of how he was turned. That's a intelligence community metaphor for how he was sent in the direction that he was sent in, if you will. You know, I just wonder if we go the way that Senator Lindsey Graham is talking, we'll have a little waterboarding here on this 19-year-old suspect. Yeah, we got to have a little waterboarding, try to get that information out of him, sensationalize it, and et cetera. But this will be interesting. But again, Don, I don't want to lose, and we're going for another 29 minutes, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a feel of what the hell happened down there in Texas. You know what I mean? Fertilizer, little fire starts, little volunteer fire department comes out and put it in, and all of a sudden it blows up. And see, yesterday on CNN there was a recording of a dispatcher. I assume the dispatcher for that county, I'm not sure. And, you know, when the place blew up, the dispatcher said, we need all emergency vehicles, a bomb just went off. Now, that's kind of a peculiar thing. Normally, a dispatcher is trained, you know, more proficiently than that to make any kind of declaration, if you will. And I thought that was just kind of an odd statement to be made by a police dispatcher, that a bomb had gone off during the course of the fire, and just the total destruction of the fertilizer plant there on the anniversary of the incident just down the road there in Waco. But I know this couldn't be a conspiracy right wing or anything like that, so apparently those pressure tanks there containing those gases and et cetera, just, they were, what, defective? Don, what you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they were defective, but I saw pictures, Mr. Edwards, on the internet of that, the plume cloud, and you thought like a miniature dirty bomb might have went off down there.
It looked like one of those old atomic bombs, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
I kind of said, well, yeah, it looks like probably maybe 15 or more people, particularly because at least five firefighters, one police officer, two paramedics, definitely. I don't know how many people were lost in the apartment building right across and from the nursing home, but you got to figure some of those people were liquefied. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
No longer any, you know, part or piece exist. I mean, they were just disintegrated. But anyways, terrible situation. I just don't know how that fertilizer plant, you know, failed all the safety tests down there.
Did
you know that was a 2.1 on the Richter scale? That plant
fell
for 50 miles.
Wow.
2.1 on the Richter scale, the equivalent of a earthquake, if you will. But anyways, back to the local scene. Interesting statements by the mayoral candidate and one city council candidate, if you will. I was hoping that Reverend Pinckney could get back to us on the date of the NAACP convention. Oh, by the way, NAACP election here the 23rd, I think. I assume that Mr. Brett Buckner and others who are, I think they're still members of the NAACP, I imagine they'll be going to vote, right?
Yeah, well, you know, if they haven't been in no meetings, they can't vote. But then, you know, they'll probably be there first.
You know, you're right, because everybody's been working to undermine President Booker Hodges, but Booker has been real shrewd. He has called a meeting faithfully and consistently with the Constitution and bylaws, but he can't make people show up. You're right about that. But anyways, there's going to be an election, and a whole lot of people are not going to be able to vote because they're not eligible. Isn't that so?
Yeah. And Mr. Edwards, I have a feed for President Obama talking right now. Should we just join
in? He's on
the
air right now as we speak. Yeah.
State and local officials sharing information, moving swiftly to track down leads has been critical to this effort. They all work as they should, as a team, and we are extremely grateful for that.
That's
we
great,
owe a tremendous
we've got our
debt
own
of gratitude.
Program. I mean,
yes.
They'll be showing this time and memorial of our president, and I'm just interested over the next 20 days how we will be, as I said before, how we will be educated on what the legal process will be. Now, they've been arresting people all over Massachusetts as possible co-conspirators. Two individuals arrested in New Bedford, Massachusetts, which is just down the road south of Boston. Three or four people were arrested in Watertown, all of them looking to have Chechen backgrounds, if you will. So I don't think that the arrests have ended with the apprehension of the last living suspect. So I think that's going to be interesting. But back to that NAACP meeting here, Minneapolis NAACP, the 23rd. President Booker T. Hodges will be reelected. That, you know, let's play like it's an election year. That's our prediction here. Yes, sir.
He'll be reelected.
Yeah, he'll be reelected. Those other folks, y'all need to get your membership cards. You know, oh, by the way, just for those that were talking about they were going to run for president, you have to be a member in good standing and have received your membership card 1 year prior to the date of the election. So, in other words, you would have had to have your membership card on the 22nd of April 2012. Okay. Can't pick up one a couple of days before the election and try to vote. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The Urban League.
It's been. And well, the Urban League is a membership organization, but then it's not. I guess I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, you can't make up your mind on that one. But yeah, if you want to know, if you want to go see this election process, it's going to be at 3334 Fourth Avenue North, 6 p.m. on the 23rd. Which is next week. So,
now, what kind of
place
is that? What's that address again, Donald Allen?
The address is 3334 Fourth Avenue North. Up there,
Council of Churches. That's right, Council of Churches up there. That's where the NAACP has their offices. Okay, election will be up there. All right, there. Well.
But you remember when they had their office in Sabathany, Mr. Edwards, for a long time?
Yes, I do.
The door was never, ever, ever open. I went up there for almost 3 weeks in a row every other day and turned the doorknob and it was never open. So.
Yeah, the people that used to sit at the front desk there at Sabathany used to confirm that it was never open. It didn't make any difference if you went in every other day or you came every day. Office was just never open, man. That was way back in the days of Dwayne Reed and that regime back in the day. Never could quite understand it, you know. But
like I said, Booker T. Hodges can only do so much as president. He you know, he can call the meetings. He can't make it come to him.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, I don't know what the procedure is, Mr. Edwards, as far as calling meetings, but I can honestly say I have not seen one public posting of a meeting for the NAACP in Minneapolis at least
in about
2008. Yeah, well, when I started looking, it was like in 2008. So, yeah, and you go back that far, yeah. Because
I
don't know.
I go back to
I know you do. I know.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out when these meetings are, where they're at, who has them, who calls them, where, you know, and you don't have it. That same way with Minneapolis Urban League. You don't know when their board meetings are, who they're elected, or what happens. And lo and behold, Al McFarland ends up as the board chairman of the Urban League, and Scott Gray is trying to start 13th grade. So that's scary all into itself. But that NAACP is something.
Go ahead,
please.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, NAACP is something to look into.
Yeah, now the 13th grade, that's going to be funded by the legislature, is that right?
Yeah, the broke legislature. Yep. That's what I hear, but I think there's too much pull against it because of the simple fact that the children that they want. I read this piece where he's trying, in the Insight News, where he's trying to push it off. Mr. Edwards has a chance for economic development, for job creation, for people ready for the workforce. And
oh, wow.
It's very interesting that he would go that route with a 13th grade, because the problem begins in third and fourth grade when the man is deciding how big the prison's going to be based on the third and fourth grade statistics, the stats on their grades. And so if they get to fifth to 12th grade, and they're not even graduating from a high school, how can they have that skill set to even try to get a job and go through a course in the 13th grade? To me, this is a money grab for the Minneapolis Urban League. I mean, Scott Gray will not call into this radio station and explain it. Al McFarland will not call into this radio station and explain it. The public policy guy that got $4,000 from the Council on Black Minnesotans, James Trice, will not call in and explain it. You can't get any of these people out here that are moving all this agenda so they seem forward to call in, or even in not even on air, just, hey, explain how this.
I understand. Let me ask you a question. You just jogged my memory, and we really probably have been remiss. We have to apologize. Did the Council on Black Minnesota make its annual report to the legislature in the last month? Did we miss that? All right.
I think they're doing that in June, if I'm not mistaken, because there's another sunset piece coming up for them.
But the legislature
and,
has to adjourn by law on the 20th of May. There's no legislative session in June.
You know what? I could check right now, since here I'm over here in the studio, and
they are required to make a report to the committee that they report to by law. I think it's the Committee on Government Affairs or whatever. And I just happen to realize that I've seen nothing in the paper, in the African-American papers, and you've not indicated that, because Mr. Allen is kind of our keeper of the cyber, if you will. I don't remember seeing any report from them. I know they got a report on the what happened with the tobacco fund money and what their agenda was, and recommendations to the legislature as it pertains to the future and the standing of African Americans here in the state of Minnesota. I know you're checking that on the computer.
I can
see that. Is anything come up?
Nothing's coming up as yet.
I know a lot of people are getting ready to go to the concert tonight, which is starting. Oh, heck, it's already started. T.I. is in town, so you know that's big. They're gonna make big money down there at the Epic. T.I. is gonna take away about $95,000. I tell you, man. So our people are well off, at least with spending their money. And let me say, with all respect to the lady that called in and asked that heck of a question of the Councilmatic candidate, I thought that wasn't handled with the sharpness that it should have been. she was absolutely on point when she said that people talk, but there is really no plan to deal with real economic and job development for the African-American community. I think it's just a shame that that's not happening. It's the reason I raised the question to Mr. Yang about, in that he was in the department, was he ever aware of a policy that said that the statistical data on city-funded projects for people of color and Pacific African Americans would never be kept, which means that if somebody tells you that, you know, 19.5% of people who worked on city-funded projects were African Americans, they can't corroborate that, can they, Mr. Allen? Because they don't keep no statistics, according to Ms. Velma Corvett.
No, they cannot. They can't even say that. They don't know the numbers. They're not tracking it, and there's no one enforcing it anyway. So, Ms. Corbell is I hope one of these, you know, at the end of the day, Mr. Edwards, I hope someone gets in there and straightens out that Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. And when I say straighten out, do a house cleaning.
I'm afraid that you were talking about sunsetting in June for the Council on Black Minnesota. I think that the next city council is going to sunset the Civil Rights Department. I think the political atmosphere is correct. And, you know, by the way, do you know we very well could have no, and we've not talked about this, and, we, you know, we have about 14 minutes, 13 minutes left.
Yes.
Do you know that we are looking at the possibility of having, for the first time in 30 years, having no African-American on the city council? We've been kind of remiss, Mr. Allen. We have not talked about that.
Well, that's right. It could go the wrong way pretty quick, or the right way, depends on how you look at it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, do it right quick for the listening audience that will be, you know, probably coming back and listening to us on demand. There'll be nobody coming out of the first, nobody coming out of the second, nobody coming out of the third, nobody definitely coming out of the fourth. The fifth will be basically the only ward. And the possibility there is that it's 50-50 and maybe even less that an African-American will make it out of the fifth ward. The 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th are going to be all white folks.
Yeah.
Now,
oh,
I got to
exactly.
Say, it's a sad commentary that for the first time in over 30 years, we have the possibility, strong possibility, let's say 90 to 10,
mm-hmm.
that we will have
yes.
no African-American on the Minneapolis City Council.
Yeah, you know, I did find something, and this is very, this is kind of funny. I have to chuckle at this. The Council on Black Minnesotans is looking for a Minnesota African Descent cultural for their Cultural Relations Summit in 2013, a summit coordinator. Now, Mr. Edwards, you think you would be applying to the Council on Black Minnesotans, but you have to send your information to the Humanities Center. And I am looking at here, it says also send, you can contact about questions of the application process, mm-hmm. contact Chair Patwin Lawrence. But to apply by mail, 5 to 7 page proposal to Elizabeth Fee, FEI, who works for the Minnesota Humanities. So again, you know, we had, they have a budget of $12,000, and they're looking for someone to coordinate this event they have coming up.
Well,
I'm
wonderful. Send it to the humanity. Oh, that's right, because the governor stripped the Council on Black Minnesotans of a number of administrative responsibilities. Oops, that's right. Nobody wants to talk about that either. that's right. The council's just kind of there. Well, wait a minute. They don't even have authority over their own administrative obligations then.
No, they do not, and it's really funny because I'm reading another proposal in the studio here while we're talking, and I'm really shocked. Now they're looking for, this came out in March 2013, they're looking for a film documentarian. They want to go back 100 years, okay? And Mr. Edwards, you know, I worked on some projects with some film before, okay? And this is what's funny. They want to... A budget is $15,000, and they want to go back 100 years. And I called Mr. Ed McDonald up and told him, I said, you know, it's about $1,000 a year to do something like that minimum for what they want. So I'm very interested to see what they end up coming up with on this. So, and again, you sent it to the Humanities individual there that I just mentioned. You
don't, the Humanities Council, okay. And that's,
yeah.
Who's the member there? That's comprised of what? Is that a subcommittee of the Council on Black Minnesotans?
No, those are the overseers for the Council on Black Minnesotans. And
oh,
so
these are the overseers. Really, this is kind of like Unchained. Okay, this is kind of the head person up at the big house. Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
That goes over there, too. And you weren't able to find the report.
No, I find
no
mention of the
legislature. Yeah, but
not at all. And I am still looking here. I got one more place to look.
Okay. Wow, you know, I thought maybe we would get some discussion for next Thursday but definitely next Friday night's program on, you know, what the future recommendations are for African Americans here in the state of Minnesota from the entity that has been our designated to, you know, look after our franchise, if you will. But wow.
You know, the day on the hill. I'm sorry, Mr. Edwards.
Go ahead. Right here. Yeah.
No, I was going to say the day on the hill, you know, they have that contract that I requested a copy of the contract, James Trice's contract, for his collaborations on Day on the Hill. And lo and behold, Mr. Edwards, Independent Business News Network was on this list as one of the media contacts. And I got to tell you, Mr. James Trice, I did not get one email from you or anybody else.
He had you down for a source that was facilitating. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary. Yeah,
it was very scary. Kind of, so.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at that. Yeah.
Okay, I am looking. Newly acquired Minnesota State Government reports. Let's see here. Council on Black Minnesotans. That was February. Nope. I am not seeing anything on the Council of Black Minnesotans as far as the report. But I'm checking one more place, and then I'm done checking. I'm not going to run behind these folks. Okay, I have a report, Minnesota Statute Chapter 10, Section 38, report January 15th, the Minnesota legislature created, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I have something here, Mr. Edwards, dated the 15th of January, and it actually has Ed McDonald's name on it. And I am looking, it's a slow-loading PDF file, so I am scrolling down slowly, trying to get a bird's-eye view of what the hell they're talking about here. Here we go. That's,
okay. It's a report filed on the occasion of Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Okay.
Yeah.
January 15th,
right? Originally created. Yeah, okay, that's poured and bottled. Let me just go to this summary here. Maybe we can get some information.
Yeah, we got about 7 minutes left. I mean,
Yes, we do.
Uh-huh.
Oh, here we go. One, advise the governor and legislature on the nature of issues confronting black people in the state. Okay. This Council of Black Minnesota developed and submitted several reports that address issues confronting black people in the state of Minnesota. Those reports can be seen at the end of this file. Okay, that's wonderful. Education. Work to create a culturally appropriate system of public education in which all children, youth, and adults achieve high academic performance levels, equitable economic opportunities, and civic engagement levels. This is just some boilerplate crap, basically, Mr. Edwards, that they're writing down on here. And I'm looking here. Oh, here we go. Council of Black Minnesota Inventory of Partners and Collaborations, 2003 to 2013. Let me just look at some interesting ones. African American Leadership Council in St. Paul. African American Men's Project of Hennepin County, which is defunct. Minnesota Black Veterans, I bet you they don't know about that. The Headwaters Foundation. Minneapolis African American Leadership Summit with Bill English, it says.
William English? Okay.
Yes. Number 11, Mr. Bill English, African American Leadership Summit. Number 11, Minneapolis, St. Paul, NAACP. Minneapolis Urban League, Sabathany. And just, it's a mess here. And so I'm just going through it. And, I mean, basically it looks like they just took names of organizations that are existing organizations. Because usually if you're going to list somebody, you list the contact.
Okay, let me ask you this question because we're down to about 5 minutes. So there's your page there that talks about the
which the statute requires, that talks about the public hearings that they had to gather a point of view from the masses. So did they have?
Let me go back
over the hearings that they have.
Let me see here. I thought I saw that in here. Maybe not. Yeah, I mean, they talk about traveling around the state, but, I mean, I don't see that in here, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, my. Well, maybe we can. I know the legislative auditor declined to investigate anything of impropriety, though they certainly did when Blue Cross Blue Shield maintained that there had been fraud involving the African-American Tobacco Trust Fund. But anyways, when the question was asked about the protective entity for African-Americans in the state of Minnesota, even the legislative auditor declined to review what was going on. So that's why I was asking, I mean, how many public hearings. Because, you know, by the way, I don't know that the Council on Black Minnesotans has had a public hearing in North Minneapolis. I'm talking about North Minneapolis. I know they had some kind of hearing up in Brooklyn Park. Around the Earl Brown Center on one Sunday, which about nine people showed up, but they've not had a public hearing in North Minneapolis, man, in 30 years.
Yeah, I don't know why they stay away from North Minneapolis. It's pretty interesting to find that out. I mean, they could have it at the Urban League at U Rock or one of those places over there. They just haven't done that. And I know that we have like actually 4 minutes left. But Mr. Edwards, you know, like I told people earlier at the top of the show, we invite Ian Alexander, Brett Buckner, Kyle Severson, and Ken Foxworthy Foxworth to be on the show. And none of them responded. Well, Kyle responded, but I know that Kyle is having his inaugural kickoff event tonight.
Okay.
And so I can dismiss that. That's okay. But we're really grateful that Mr. Blog Yang called in and got some information from him. And want to tell people tomorrow, tune in at 3 o'clock, where Mr. Edwards will be on this same station at 3 p.m. tomorrow. And he has some more conversations for you.
Absolutely. So, again, join us next Friday night, and we may be opening up on Thursday night, too. Don, is that correct?
That is correct. Our goal is to be on at least five times a week to provide real-time news and information, and I think it's a good thing. And so we're in some negotiation with some people, and it should be pretty exciting. But I'd like to thank everybody for listening today. And, you know, hold these elected officials and these candidates running for office accountable. And if anybody sees Brett Buckner, tell him I say hello and what happened to the NAACP money. Anything else, Mr. Edwards?
No, that NAACP piece is rather interesting. Long live Reverend Gail Ford.
And oh, yeah.
The Minneapolis Leave No Child Left Behind money that disappeared. But anyways, hey, Don, we'll be talking. Everybody enjoy what will be probably a change in the weather pretty quick. This has been a miserable April.
Yes, it has. All right. Thanks for listening.
All right then, Don. Okay.